This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
To 30 minutes of special English, VOA's daily news and information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News. But first, as it is.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to As It Is. Hello, I'm Steve Ember. Today on our program, Jim Tedder tells us about improvements in the humanitarian situation for the people of Somalia. Then we learn about a box bank under a tree that is improving life for women in South Sudan. And finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells how new leaders in China are taking aggressive steps against corruption. There has been a big improvement in Somalia's humanitarian situation. United Nations officials say that is because of better aid provision, success against militants, and good rainfall. Jim Tedder has more.
There are about 1 million fewer Somalis listed as being in crisis. That is half the total number of people who were in crisis 6 months ago. In 2011, famine, widespread lack of food, was declared in several parts of Somalia. Many people died, and many others walked for weeks to reach areas with food and water. Luca Alanovi directs the operations of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, in Somalia. Mr. Alanovi said FAO worked against the famine by providing money.
During the famine and the season after, we've been substantially intervening with the cash-based intervention. We've been supporting the people to stay where they were.
Mr. Alanovi said FAO was especially strong in supporting the Cash for Work program. The program aided people so they could produce during a difficult season and breed animals. He said earlier interventions were based more on simply providing food, shelter, and other needs. At a time when climate change has made yearly rainfall either hard to predict or scarce, 2012 had good rainfall, he said. And two major rivers that cross Somalia are good for irrigation, providing water to the land. Another major improvement affecting the humanitarian situation has been success in fighting Al-Shabaab militants. Forces from the African Union, known as AMISOM, have driven the group out of many areas. But Mr. Alanovi says insecurity is still a problem.
It's still quite unstable, and the military operation is still ongoing very much, particularly in the agricultural area, in the rural area, which obviously creates a climate of uncertainty.
The FAO official said most of the rural area remains under the control of Al-Shabaab.
VOA's Jim Tedder. You're listening to As It Is in VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember. South Sudan is one of the worst places to be a woman. It has the highest death rate in the world for pregnant women and new mothers. Slowly, aid agencies have begun to help South Sudanese women take more control over their lives. Under a tree, women gather, singing and dancing. They are waiting for the bank to open. The bank is also under the tree. It is a simple wooden box made secure by a small metal lock. Teresa Ajok Aduang is the only one of the women who can read. She is the director of this box bank in Rumbek in Lakes State. The women can use their money to buy shares in the bank. The money can then be lent to bank members who pay it back with interest. Only about 16% of women in South Sudan can read. Teresa Ajok Aduang says while the nation was part of Sudan, women were not permitted to do business. Now, some women are selling things in the market or fresh homegrown fruits and vegetables. But she says few men understand that women have an important role in business. At first, men were concerned about letting their wives join the bank. They accused the women of just sitting around and talking. Most have changed their opinion as they have seen their wealth grow. One husband, Akot Dal Machur, even joined the bank. He says he has learned that women are skillful, and whatever little money they have, they can save. Deborah Arach works for the International Rescue Committee. She has watched women who were trapped at home with little hope increase their worth.
Now they have changed, they become strong, and they are proud of themselves. They have something to contribute at home also. They are feeling proud. Not like before, you depend on man.
She says the bank has also enabled women to work together, not only to make money, but to share ideas and solve problems. As It is coming to you in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Since China's leadership change began last November, the party's new leaders have been taking aggressive steps to crack down on corruption. One recent measure requires that officials publicly release information about their wealth and property. Kelly Jean Kelly reports.
Chinese citizens are increasingly asking to know more about their public officials. They want to know about their incomes, how many houses they own, and how they invest their money. There have been attempts in the past to release more of these details to the public. But there has never been a top-down approach for openness across the government. However, that could soon be changing. China's Communist Party has publicly admitted its fight against corruption is a life or death struggle. It has announced plans to begin several new programs requiring officials to make information about their wealth public. The programs will be set up in the eastern city of Ningbo and three others in the progressive province of Guangdong. State media reports say the program in Ningbo will only apply to newly appointed government officials. The programs in Guangdong will require major party and government officials to report their assets, investments, and employment details of their spouses and children. Some of the test programs that have already been launched in China include one in Xinjiang and the provinces of Hunan and Zhejiang. Alan Clayton Green is an analyst with China Policy. He says the program in Xinjiang lasted for less than a year and ended when the anti-corruption official there died. The program in Zhejiang Seshe has been going on since 2009.
That required people to disclose their personal income, private cars and houses, as well as those owned by their children and family members. But one of the issues with the Cixi pilot program was that there were zero complaints received from the public, and then there was a big sort of fury about the fact that there emerged that there was actually no way in which the public could file complaints in respect of the official's assets.
Analysts say that just how high up the experiments in Ningbo and Guangdong will go remains to be seen. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's As It Is for today. Remember, you can hear the latest news at the top of the hour, Universal Time. I'm Steve Ember. Thanks for joining us.
Next, the Agriculture Report. Then, science in the news. Sign up for our weekly email report and try our new English teaching activities. Go to voaspecialenglish.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and iTunes at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report in Special English. To walk the talk means to keep your promises, to do what you said you would do. Walk the Talk is also the name of a new report by the International Food Policy Research Institute. IFPRI says there has been a lot of talk about fighting hunger, but not enough action. As a result, it says the international community could fall far short of the goal of cutting the number of hungry people in half by 2015. The report says an estimated 870 million people were hungry last year. 2 billion did not get enough micronutrients, vitamins, and minerals. IFPRI Director General Shengen Fen describes 2012 as a mixed year for progress against hunger.
African countries, India, China, Brazil, continue to commit themselves to increase investment in agriculture, in agriculture research, to really increase their production productivity. At a global level, donor agencies, the World Bank, USAID, have also increased their investment in agriculture, in food security and nutrition.
But Mr. Fen says a lack of political will limited progress on food security.
In 2012, we had lots of debates, discussions, conferences without clear roadmap, without clear actual plan to implement.
After the food crisis in 2008 and 2009, many promises were made to increase investment in smallholder agriculture. Small farms are often headed by women.
Many countries have made progress in supporting smallholders. However, many other countries have also failed in doing that.
Supporters of greater agricultural investment in poor countries have often criticized farm support programs in rich nations. They say subsidies in rich nations put developing countries at a disadvantage in producing and selling their goods. Now, countries such as India and China are also turning to subsidies.
Well, this has been a trend, but it's not necessarily the right trend. So we need to change that trend.
Mr. Fen says 2013 is an important year, both to review the progress of the Millennium Development Goals and to set new goals for after 2015.
hungry people, poor people must be on the top of the post-2015 agenda. And clearly, the whole economy, including agricultural production, food production, has to be sustainable in long run by using less water and less land, less energy, or use them more efficiently.
He says ending hunger would have effects far beyond nutritional concerns.
The global community will be more peaceful, probably will be more prosperous, because if people don't worry about the food, they have the energy to think something else.
Shengyan Fan says there is no excuse for anyone to go to bed hungry. He says it's time the international community walked the talk on food security. And that's the VOA Special English Agriculture Report. I'm Karen Leggett. From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News, in Special English. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Scientists who study the Earth tell us the continents and ocean floors are always moving. This movement sometimes can be violent, causing death and destruction. Today, we examine what causes earthquakes and volcanic activity.
The first pictures of Earth taken from space showed a solid ball covered by brown and green land masses and blue-green oceans. It appeared as if the Earth had always looked that way and always would. Yet the surface of the Earth is not as solid or as permanent as had been thought. Scientists found that the surface of our planet is always in motion. Continents move about the Earth like huge ships at sea, floating on pieces of the Earth's outer skin, or crust. New crust is created as melted rock pushes up from inside the planet. Old crust is destroyed as it moves toward the hot rock and melts.
In the 20th century, scientists began to understand that the Earth is a great living and moving structure. Some experts say this understanding is one of the most important revolutions in scientific thought. The knowledge of the Earth's constant motion is based on the work of scientists who study the movement of the continents. This process is called plate tectonics. Earthquakes and volcanic activity are a result of that process. Plate tectonics is the area of science that explains why the Earth's surface moves and how those changes cause earthquakes and volcanic activity.
Scientists say the surface of the Earth is cracked like a huge eggshell. They call these pieces tectonic plates. As many as 20 of them cover the Earth. The plates sometimes hit each other and sometimes move away from each other. Because some continents are above two plates, the continents move when the plates do.
The movement of tectonic plates can cause earthquakes and volcanoes. Modern instruments show that about 90% of all earthquakes happen along a few lines in several places around the Earth. These lines follow underwater mountains where hot liquid rock flows up from deep inside the Earth. Sometimes the melted rock comes out with a great burst of pressure. This forces apart pieces of the Earth's surface in a violent earthquake. Some earthquakes take place at the edges of continents. Pressure increases as two plates move against each other. When this happens, one plate moves past the other, suddenly causing the Earth's surface to split open.
One example of this pressure is found on the west coast of the United States. Part of California is on what is known as the Pacific Plate. The other part of the state is on what is known as the North American Plate. Scientists say the Pacific Plate is moving toward the northwest, while the North American Plate is moving toward the southeast. These two huge plates come together at what is called a fault line. This line between the plates in California is called the San Andreas Fault. It is along or near this fault line that most of California's earthquakes take place, as the two tectonic plates move in different directions. The city of Los Angeles is about 50 kilometers from the San Andreas Fault. Many smaller fault lines can be found throughout the Los Angeles area.
As we noted earlier, scientists began making major discoveries about plate tectonics in the 20th century. One of those scientists was Alfred Wegener of Germany. 100 years ago, he proposed that the continents had moved and were still moving. Wegener said the idea came to him when he saw that the coasts of South America and Africa fit together like two pieces of a puzzle. He suspected that the two continents might have once been one and then split apart. Wegener believed the continents had once been part of a huge area of land that he called Pangaea. He said the huge continent had split more than 200 million years ago. And he said the pieces were still floating apart.
Alfred Wegener investigated the idea that continents move. He noted that a line of mountains that appears from east to west in South Africa looks almost exactly the same as a line of mountains in Argentina, on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. He found fossil remains of the same kind of an early plant in parts of Africa, South America, India, Australia, and even Antarctica. Wegener said the mountains and fossils were evidence that all the land on Earth was united at some time in the distant past.
Wegener also noted differences between the continents and the ocean floor. He said the oceans were more than just low places that had filled with water. Even if the water was removed, he said, a person would still see differences between the continents and the ocean floor. Also, the continents and the ocean floor are not made of the same kind of rock. The continents are made of a granite-like rock. Granite is made when hot, liquid rock cools and hardens under the Earth's surface. The ocean floor is basalt rock, a mixture of silicon and magnesium. The German scientist said the lighter continental rock floated up through the heavier basalt rock of the ocean floor.
Support for Wegener's ideas did not come until the 1950s. Two American scientists found that the continents moved as new seafloor was created under the Atlantic Ocean. Harry Hess and Robert Dietz said a thin valley in the Atlantic was a place where the ocean floor splits. They said hot, melted material flows up from deep inside the Earth through the split. As the hot material reaches the ocean floor, it spreads out, cools, and hardens. It becomes new ocean floor. The Americans proposed that the floor of the Atlantic Ocean is moving away from each side of the split. The movement is very slow, a few centimeters a year. In time, they said, the moving ocean floor is blocked when it comes up against the edge of a continent. Then it is forced down under the continent, deep into the earth, where it is melted again. Harry Hess and Robert Dietz said, this spreading does not make the earth bigger. As new ocean floor is created, an equal amount is destroyed.
The two scientists said Wegener was correct. The continents do move as new material from the center of the Earth rises, hardens, and pushes older pieces of the Earth away from each other. The continents are moving all the time, although we cannot feel it. They called their theory sea floor spreading. The theory explains that as the sea floor spreads, the tectonic plates are pushed and pulled in different directions.
The idea of plate tectonics explains both volcanoes and earthquakes. Many of the world's volcanoes are found at the edges of plates, where geologic activity is intense. The large number of volcanoes around the Pacific plate has earned this area the name Ring of Fire. Volcanoes are also found in the middle of plates, where there is a well of melted rock. Scientists call these wells hot spots. A hot spot does not move. However, as the plate moves over it, a line of volcanoes is formed. The Hawaiian Islands were created in the Pacific Ocean as the plate moved slowly over a hot spot. This process is continuing as the plate continues to move.
Volcanoes and earthquakes are among the most frightening events that nature can produce. They cause us to remember that the Earth is not as solid and unchanging as we might like to think. An American scientist says, because of expected population increases, more people will die in earthquakes. And he thinks there will be more of what he calls catastrophic earthquakes, where large numbers of people die.
Thomas Holzer is with the United States Geological Survey. He and James Savage, another USGS worker, studied catastrophic earthquakes in which more than 50,000 people died. The two men also estimated the total number of deaths over the past 500 years. They compared those events to estimates of world population. They found that the number of catastrophic earthquakes has risen as the human population grows. The scientists are predicting about 21 catastrophic earthquakes in the 21st century. Only 7 such earthquakes took place in the last century. And they say total earthquake deaths could more than double if the world population grows to 10.1 billion by 2100. This Science in the News program was written by Christopher Cruz. Our producer was Jean Sims. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us again next week for more news about science in special English on the Voice of America. This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing off.
によりますと福島第一原発18日夜7時前。